Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hey everyone, this is your host, Tim Rutten. Today, we're going to be sharing another insights-packed conference panel called Disrupting the Disruptors, How Banks Are Taking on FinTech. Tune in to hear how your bank can leverage different strategies to remain relevant and competitive in a market that's rapidly evolving, allowing you to combat the rising tide of influential neobanks. Enjoy.
This panel obviously represents MEA. We have representatives from both the Middle East and Africa. And so hopefully we're going to get some nice dialogue going on in how to disrupt the disruptors. And with that said, I wanted to introduce my esteemed guests. Starting off, we have Dr. Ahmed Darwish, who is the head of digital delivery at Bank Al Bilad. We're followed by Abdullah Alawabel, who is the head of group digital at Bank Saudi Fransi. Mr. Sharif Alabri, CEO of Misr Digital Innovation. Dr. Ali Shakali, AGM and Head of Digital Banking and E-Channels at the National Bank of Oman, representing the Middle East with the traditional tier. And finally, Yves Sumalong, who leads Digital Product for the United Bank for Africa. Warm welcome, guys. Please feel free to have a seat. We can move this around. Let's get comfortable. First of all, thank you very much for making the time being here. I actually wanted to start off by asking an open-ended question to everyone, which is digital disruption. What on earth does that mean, right? And maybe I just wanted to go across the line and just get each person's point of view. But to make this a little bit of a challenge, you have 30 seconds to explain your point of view on digital disruption. Please.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum and good afternoon. Happy to be here with you today. Disruption means that you change the way of doing things. So I think with the new technology that's coming from day to another, we are being disrupted by technologies first. And the other point of view, which we are talking about today, by the fintech companies and sometimes, you know, other than fintechs, even today, telecom companies are playing the role of banks and sometimes. So the customer today is getting, you know, drafted into different service providers for the same services that we used to provide as banks. And this is the challenge that we have.
Perfect. Mr. Abdullah, your thoughts?
I think disruption can be seen in many different ways. Obviously, starting with technology, as Dr. Ahmed said, but I think mindset and ways of finding innovative and clever business cases that could be built on those new emerging technologies. That's definitely one thing that we see a lot of banks struggling to overcome, changing the legacy mindset and how we deploy technology to support providing our products and services. So I think a key, a key way to do that is, chase after, talented, bright minds that maybe some of the fintechs have been, capable of attracting. And by doing that, you start to create a culture that is very open and very innovative and capable of taking this technology and, reimagining how we, offer our products and services. That's certainly, I think, a way of looking at it.
Mr. Sharif, your thoughts?
I believe that digital disruption itself, it's not the issue. It's adopting it. Technology and digital has been there forever, and every era has its own digital disruption or technology disruption. It's more about the management and adoption of that disruption and how can we use it to cope and to exist.
Wonderful. Dr. Ali?
Disruption, it is actually, I think from my perspective, it is knock the door just to tell you we are here. That means you have to wake up and to ensure that you are in line with the market. Other than this, the opportunity, you will lose it and it will move to the others. The same what is highlighted by my colleague, the doctor. This is today in the market from the banking perspective. We are seeing that other sectors is coming and is replacing the banking services. Telecom, it is one of them. In our market, we have been seeing them, it is aggressively. Almost today, the telecom, they are offering the same services banking is over. Maybe it is for limited services or product because the regulation, it is not allowed them. But it is potential. It is more than threats, but you have to be aggressive as well as and to be proactive.
Thank you, Ali. For me, disruption is giving value in totally different manners. So it could be digital or not, and it depends on the market. So we have some market where disruption could be seen as disruption, but in another market is totally seamless. So for me, it's providing value in totally different manners. Thank you.
Interesting. And I think that that's basically the point, and the esteemed panel here has managed to articulate it very clearly, is, you know, the banking landscape is just so regularly evolving within our region. Whether you look at the Middle East or Africa, change is just so pertinent. And I think to that point, Sharif, I wanted to ask you, you know, what is so unique about a digital-only bank, vis-a-vis in terms of what it can offer to customers, be it in your experience in Egypt, or also looking at the wider region, that you believe traditional banks just can't do? Why are digital banks better, if at all?
Sure. Actually, digital banks are still selling banking. They are not, or we are not, inventing a new product. All what we're trying to do or inventing is a new mode of delivery of the service. The good thing or the positive thing that a digital bank can do that a current traditional bank cannot, actually I can summarize them into 2 points. One point is the building the technology stack from scratch. And this is the big advantage that these banks or digital banks have, which is all traditional banks across the Middle East and Africa and almost across the globe, we inherited the technology we use today, and it was built over the past 50 years. And I can see it, actually, it's very close to that Babylonian structure. It's huge, it's very complicated, but it's not one structure. It was built in bits and pieces. By the way, one bank, which is the bank that I'm representing, it is owned 100% by a traditional bank, which is Bank Misr. It's a totally separate subsidiary, and Bank Misr decided that let's revamp the bank and transform it. That's one issue. And then let's get into a new entity to future-proof the banking in Egypt. So we started from a white scratch, a white paper scratch, and we started designing how would a modernized architecture, whether it's back-end or integration or front-end, would look like. And we totally changed the technology stack in the back-end, where core banking is not really the real orchestrator anymore. It's a satellite system. And we stripped a lot of the functionalities we use today in our banks. In core banking, we stripped it out of core banking. It's a pure GL system, and this is what it's meant to be. We try as much as possible in our banks to customize the core banking, and we make a monster out of it. What we did is we stripped out all of these customizations, and we did it into different layers and different systems, but core banking is a pure satellite system. So that point, which is the designing an architecture from scratch and designing a customer experience, architecture that is driven from the customer experience, that's not a luxury we have in our conventional banks. We have a system, and we make the most out of that system. The second point, it's on the branches side. The pressure when we start, we had a choice in Bank Misr to do that bank or to do that bank as a segment inside the bank, totally separate app. With new sexy colors that speaks to the youth, but we the migrating business from the branches to that segment would put definitely a lot of pressure on the branches, a lot of pressure on closing branches and layoffs. That's another privilege that digital banks, they don't have to deal with it from day one. I don't have to create any kind of internal synergies between my different channels that I need to migrate people from the physical to the digital. I'm established digital, so I don't have this burden of negotiations with the central bank to close branches and to lay off people. And so that's a luxury, another luxury that digital banks has. From a proposition perspective, to your main question, I believe that any bank can do whatever proposition they want to do. It's a matter of how fast and how simple and how personalized can it be. Any bank can do whatever proposition, but the digital banks with a modernized architecture can easily do that proposition. Bank Misr, my main conventional bank, can do it. Yes, 100% can do it. But with too many workarounds because of the back end was not designed like that.
Understood. And I think that's an interesting insight. And I also wanted to ask maybe some of the more incumbent banks on the panel today. So Dr. Ali, from your perspective, if those are kind of the benefits of a digital bank whereby they get to remove that organizational burden, as Sharif was speaking about, how on earth do traditional banks compete?
I may be slightly different than Ashraf. Because always, see, there is definition for digital bank. To be honest, till today, I couldn't find someone to convince me what is mean by real digital bank. Once we take it from the conventional bank, we are offering all the services and products today in the digital channels, which we are competing with the conventional branch. And it is dependent on the bank strategy. Our strategy has been started back to 2021, where we build our five-year strategy, either for conventional or digital, and digital main objectives to convert 50% of the transaction from legacy branch to digital channel, to digitize the product and services, and mainly for retail customer, individual, because coming 5 years, we are working for the SMEs and large corporate and government banking. And the third one to be number one digital bank by 2025 in Oman market. And so far we have been achieved almost three objectives. But saying that, digital bank, it is, if the bank is decide only matter to migrate and shut down the legacy branch, that has been did by us. Over 3 years has been shut down three legacy branch. We introduce 10 digital branch, fully digital branch for customer to serve 24/7 for all type of service and product. And we digitize it more in the mobile application, which is more convenience. And we ensure that it is built a seamless journey for customer. Legacy branch or legacy banking, it is the fundamental. And is again, I am going back, is dependent on the bank strategy or the board, all the stakeholder strategy. It's coming from the board and the top management. Are we working to migrate our existing customer to the digital channels and to sustain with the market with all the competition? Or we are targeting to onboard a new customer? As per our business model from the digital perspective, we have 6 pillars. And we have to ensure all the digitized product and services, it is in line with at least minimum 3 of those pillars. One of the first pillars is NTP acquisition, which mean whatever we have been digitized, we have to think from 2 perspectives, the new customer and existing customer for migration. The second one, and it is the main, it is customer experience. We have to simplify the journey as maximum as we can. And when it's coming to the customer experience, we build our vision. It is only 3 clicks, which mean previously customer to open individual account, at least minimum, I think if I'm not mistaken, customer need to sign 15 pages. With digital onboarding, we introduce it with a digital signature. We import all the information from the main source of the civil ID or residence ID. That's customer only put the minimum information. The third one, it is not a pain point. This is the board requirement, ROI, generate revenue. we have to ensure that we are generating revenue, generating liabilities, and last but not the least, it is to fulfillment the compliance requirement. Compliance requirement, again, it is internal and external. We have division of compliance and we have regulation. In Oman today, we have more than one regulation. We have Central Bank of Oman, we have Consumer Protection, we have Royal Oman Police. We have to ensure whatever we digitize it, it is in line with them. Like in Islam, you are getting married from four wives, you have to balance between four of them. And that's what we try to do. And regardless what we digitize, we have to ensure there is KPI to migrate the transaction. And as per our consultant, and recently we have been received that draft for the digital bank from the regulation. We have been seeing ourselves, we are there. And now it is our final call. Shall we move in line with that new circular or we sustain with us? And today, digital banking in our bank, it is considered as a channel. We are enabler and we ensure that we are fulfilling the requirement, the customer, as well as to generate revenue, and we help other streamline of business. The second, what we are aiming to come as digital as a business line. We have our own BNL. We have our own target, either financial and non-financial. And it is the fundamental, once we decide as a bank to be independent, that means our fundamental, it is ready. And this is what we are working in it. But as legacy branch, it is our fundamental. We cannot denying them at all.
An interesting perspective. And I think it raises a very good point that I actually wanted to come to you on, Mr. Abdullah, which is that you hear from our panelists today that it seems like it's a bit of a competition, this whole digital versus traditional banking. But I wanted to get your perspective in, is there room for collaboration? Could a traditional bank partner with a digital challenger to enhance digital and provide greater digital offerings within the market? Or do you think that's just never going to happen? That's a dream for us fintechs.
No, I think it's a reality that's starting to creep in. Since the early days of of the hype around fintechs coming around, there was this uncomfortable pushback. Are we gonna collaborate with fintechs? Are they gonna challenge the banks and take away their businesses? And I think what we are starting to see, it's not really an easy thing to do. These are organizations that have been established for a long time and have accumulated a very rich vault of learnings over the years. Now, definitely there is room of collaboration. There are some capabilities that digital banks, despite the fact that they come new, fresh, and energetic, that they don't have. Those capabilities can be provided by the traditional banks. Certainly around, running a healthy balance sheet, making sure that you're well positioned for a long term and et cetera. Now, on the other side, how fintechs have been successful in, deploying technologies to provide, a proposition that appeals to some of the segments that traditional banks have been serving over the years. As a bank, you have the option to either, work on your infrastructure and technology landscape to make sure that you define specific use cases that those fintechs, those new or challenger banks can come and use and capitalize on, to better scale the market into a different, level. There is obviously challenges around that because banks struggle between, is the priority for me to fix my infrastructure to become a digital bank? Certainly, a promised land. A lot of banks are trying to arrive to. But in my opinion, I think there is no right or wrong. There is the business model that you, as a bank, you want to focus on, and how you want to create the opportunity for you in the future. Some banks, for example, referring to our market in KSA, have been successful in identifying these priorities early on when fintechs started to emerge, and they have been successfully able to, you know, be labeled as an incubator for a lot of these fintechs. Obviously, that created a lot of revenue, new revenue streams for them, and all of these fintechs had deposits that sit within this traditional bank. If you ask any other bank today, they would be, you know, more than happy to, you know, grasp some of that market share. But had they not, you know, focused on that specific business model or specific use case that they thought was very good for their situation at the time, they wouldn't have, you know, made a positive outcome out of this disruption that we have seen. Some banks have decided to do it in a different way. We have the financial you know, strength. We have the deep pockets. So let us go and invest in this green field. Let us go and compete in attracting some of this talent and put together JVs or entities that sit outside the traditional bank as far as possible, and give them the mandate to focus on a specific proposition and try to disrupt the market with it. You can obviously do both. You can invest and co-create, as well as provide your core capabilities for those fintechs to capitalize on. For me, I don't think there is a right approach to this. If we want to be a bit too philosophical about it, I think the future is very interesting in a sense that it will be so easy for us to create technologies or to create products that are fully dependent on technologies in a sense that it becomes a very competitive environment, especially with the maturity of AI over time. It will be easy for any entity, regardless whether you are a fintech, whether you are a bank, or any industry, to create a product that is fully developed using AI. Now that will create lots of offerings. It will be easy for you to create an offering. So it's in a sense, everyone will be a technology company. It's just the differentiator will be how you brand yourself and what are the use cases that you have been able to, you know, put together and master using those technologies. Obviously, marketing and how you position your brand is gonna be key in that future. Open banking and then open data, decentralization all play into this, you know, visionary thought. It's challenging to accept. It's challenging to foresee it, but I think it is going to be a reality in the future. With that, I think a lot of banks today are stuck whether enhance their main digital propositions and invest on it and make sure that they scale it and they stay competitive in that they bring a lot of products within their main digital channels. But if you realize this thought that I was mentioning earlier, then it becomes your ability to decouple and decentralize your offering and be able to dynamically and flexibly inject your products and services and technologies in the different, you know, customer journeys across different industries will be very key for you to succeed and stay relevant in the future. It's a bit challenging to accept, but it's definitely a trend that we see emerging slowly. But similar to, you know, the start of fintechs and how they emerged, I think it's very key for us to realize what is the next, immediate future.
Interesting perspective. And I think you raised a very excellent point here, which is, you know, the actual product itself, the banking product. And I wanted to ask you, you know, given that digital products need to evolve to meet the needs of the geography that you're in, and in specific in your case, you know, with the African market, which is incredibly diverse, and obviously you are in multiple locations across the continent, right? What is your perspective on the role that innovation plays in terms of staying competitive, but also to address that diversity? Because what would work potentially in Nigeria will potentially not work in Egypt. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, totally right. Sub-Saharan, let's say zone or area, what I can see, the gold Iceland, because there are so many things to do there. So there is some real challenge, because when you talk about Africa, Africa can be divided in two zones. We have north and south zone, which have more developed than the sub-Saharan zone. And in sub-Saharan, you will notice that the banking side is not really, really developed. So I will give some figures about Central Africa. So we have around 54 banks with 7 million of customers. Wow. And we have only six fintechs, and the whole six fintechs has 40 million customers. So you see the difference between the both. So when we talk about that, the zone, there's two main let's say challenges. The first one is the infrastructure, because the internet is not really developed in the countries. And the second one is compliance, is regulation, because the regulation is trying now to leverage on experience on the market to frame new regulations for fintechs and wallet providers. And that is the reason why bank is not going very fast, so compared to fintechs. So the main, key difference between the both is the channel, because fintech are using USSD. Okay, USSD is a protocol not using internet. So it's GSM protocol. So it can be anywhere. You have a feature phone, you can access to your banking, to your wallet, through the USSD, and do what you want to do, P2P, payment, bills, and so on. So that is a big difference between banking and fintech. So now banks are trying now to digitalize their services. But as I mentioned before, the real challenge is the internet coverage, because to do digitalization, you need to have internet. So in the few presentations we had this morning, you saw that you need internet first, second, the digitalization, and third one, AI. So right now, what we are trying to do is to do the partnership, bilateral partnership. So to diversify our services to the market. So we have, for example, bank to wallet and wallet to bank, which is growing very fast. So you see people having wallets and people have bank accounts, so we can do the bank to the wallet and wallet to the bank. And it's growing very fast. When we started doing it, we saw some branches, the queue was really free in the branch, because the main, let's say, services for people was to come to the bank to do cash withdrawal or to cash deposit. So now with the wallet to bank or bank to wallet, you can do your transaction in your house, in your home. So for me, I think that for digitalization, it depends, first of all, in the infrastructure, what you have. Second, the regulation. And third one, the service, how we position our market, how we position ourselves on the market. I will take one personal example. I have my mother. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, when WhatsApp came, I think it was 6-7 years ago, and she didn't bother about WhatsApp. She didn't want to hear about WhatsApp. So that seems is your application. I don't want to hear about it. But I have my sisters in Europe. Mm-hmm. So when one day I talked to her, I said, okay, do you know that you can call your daughter in Belgium, in France, without having your head time drop and so on? Are you sure that you can do that? Yeah, yes, you can do. So we try. So at the time, she felt that, okay, I've called, yes, I checked my balance, my head time, nothing has move. So that means that it's really helpful. So she was the one advertising WhatsApp in to the, all the family. So no, you can WhatsApp is good. Download it. So you see, I'm not sure that maybe Mark Zuckerberg is aware about my mother, but my mother is aware about who is Mark Zuckerberg because he's the one handling the WhatsApp now. So I think that we must position our value to what the market is looking for. And sometimes maybe the market is not ready, and you must understand the market and you must find our way to the market. So I will take the quote of Henry Ford, who was saying that if you were asking to people what they want, and they will answer that they want a horse which is going fast instead of a motor. So that's my view on specialization about digital banking or fintech. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for that. That's an interesting perspective because, Dr. Ahmed, you're basically looking at digital delivery, right? And I think for me, I translate that as the so what, right? So using the example of Eva's mother and how she basically promoted WhatsApp across, we see a lot of these new emerging trends coming out within banking, you know, be it, I think AI we've covered in some depth, but maybe looking at some others like digital assets or other innovations shaping customer experience or providing new financial offerings, such as the open banking component that we held, right? What's your perspective on these innovations from a practical standpoint? The so what, right? Because it's good to talk buzzwords, but if we can't use it, what good is it?
You just said the right word, use it. So the use case is the most important part of this subject. It's not about adapting a technology for the sake of adapting a technology or that everyone is following that technology. And I have to have a use case which is really going to be useful and customers will really be engaged. Because if you can launch a product that's not going to be really attached to the lifestyle of the customer, then it's going to be a waste of money. And we have several initiatives happen in the past and maybe even in our country. So the use case itself is the value that you need to look at. And I remember a few years back, I've been proposed to three projects in a committee, and the three of them is asking for 3 to 5 million Saudi riyal or whatever as a budget. And everybody was just defending the project and the committee was discussing the project. And then when the third one came, I say, guys, this is an RPA project with three use cases. You don't have to go for three projects, 5 million, 3 million each. Instead of that, you spend 10 to 15 million. Okay, go and bring RPA, and then you can have these three use cases underneath. So, and even with the scale up, you can do and increase the number of agents that you need to work. And we can reuse that even for internal other processes, even in the bank. So, This is how we should think about the disruptive technologies and the new things coming. However, I still also need to emphasize that when you start having a technology coming, you can also start thinking about what and where can I use that technology in my business. So it's the opposite. Yani, it's not only that you have a use case and the technology is there. Okay, bring that technology. No, when you see a new technology coming, let's see if you can capitalize on that technology, just like the infrastructure that we have in the country. If you have an infrastructure to give you authentication, why should you go for a solution to, you know, capture the image of the customer while you can just authenticate the customer in a simple way? So having a technology that's disrupting the banking can also help you to identify and find either new solutions or new products and service for customers. Yani, one of the new initiatives I have seen is the use of metaverse. Mm. Everyone was saying this is a fancy, nobody will be using it, blah, 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 blah. When it comes to, as what Yok said this morning about family business, okay, so kids will be very interested when you bring them metaverse and try to do some gamifications for them in the application and try to attract them because this is the mind setup of your customer or that segment of your customer. So it's not about only disruptive technologies, it's all about the use cases. And I believe that by trying to innovate. And two days before, I was sitting with one of my vendors. We were talking about a use case. On the fly, while we are just discussing the use case, we have reached into the extreme solution for the customer to get everything from that solution. It's a life, become as a lifestyle solution for customers. Don't tell me that this is not going to fly. This for sure is going to be attractive for customers. It's going to solve their problems. It's going to bring their value to their lifestyle to make sure that they are happy with the solution. And for sure, that will increase the revenue of the bank. This will reduce the friction that we have today and so on. So if you go to the branch people and telling them, okay, I'll bring you Metaverse to become a virtual branch, okay? If that is going to be just for fancy and you just have a customer wearing the Oculus or just going for virtual reality to see a fancy branch, is not going to be useful. But when you bring them something that's maybe physically limited, like, for example, if you want to buy a car in the auto lease solution, and then you have to visit multiple showrooms to select the car. If I can bring you this in Metaverse, where you can just do a test drive, see the all options that you have, try to select the best car that you want on the Metaverse, I'm sure that everyone in the room here will be accepting this as a good use case. So that's it, how you capitalize on the disruption to better enhance the customer experience and solutions for them.
Interesting perspectives. And I think what's very unique about our region, OLAP, and when I say our region, I mean the Middle East and Africa region, is effectively the cultural and social factors that really influence, you know, the kind of adoption we see when it comes to digital banking perspectives. And what I wanted to get from each of you, starting with you, Yves, from Africa perspective, is what are some of these key social and cultural elements that you, from your region, keep into, you know, top priority consideration when thinking about digital banking? And what is your perspective in terms of how these might change, let's say, over the next 3 to 5 year period? A quick minute on that, please.
Okay, good. So before it was payment, so transfer. So because, you know, we are in Sub-Saharan, and we need, when you have money, you need to share the money with someone. So you need to send money to someone. That was the primary use case. Send money to someone. So that primary has been solved already. So the new one is now the micro lending. Yeah, because now, yes, I can send money to someone, fine. Now, how can I lend? On how can the person who is supposed to receive money from me can lend itself, himself, and now do what you want to do and repay back and refund back? So that is in the next, let's say, 1-2 years, the main use case we are following is the micro lending. So for fintech perspective and banking, because for banking you know how to lend, but now how to do the micro for small, for people which is not bankable. So that was the main challenge. So same digital banking and digital banks and fintech, they are working seamless on how to partnership to push the micro-lending on the market for the financial inclusion.
That's amazing. Thank you. That's amazing. Dr. Ali, your perspective here?
First, it is, we have to believe the digital banking or the digital services and products. And that's believe it should be start from the internal. When we said internal, this is the bank. Within the employees, the management, the board, they believe it is the digital, it is the right driven. Then we have to be expanded to external, who are our targeted customer. Then we have to be adopt the technology. We have to invest. We have to accelerate it. We have to leverage the technology and that services. And we have to go beyond the banking. Today, from our perspective, we have been leverage our services for non-banking sector. We resell it, actually. We have been already started with remittance. Now we are start with the payment, with other, even ATM services we leverage with the others. And the main thing is the reputation. You have to ensure what you are built from the internal, external, it is reflected in the right position for the reputation and give the credit in the market and to be the one of the best benchmarking. I really like our Vodafone Oman experience. Once I visit them, they invite me to visit them. Entire Vodafone Oman team, when you are asked them any question, they said we are digital. You ask them about call center, they said we are digital. When you are asked about the branch, they said we don't have a branch, we are digital. It is start from the CEO to the smaller staff. And this is what they have believed, and that's why they are success. When they start, the target for the first year to onboard 10,000. When they launch it, they got shock. Within 3 months, they onboard 30,000 customers. Even the services go down. It went down because the capacity and the server, it was not built for 30,000 customers. And the belief and to build the culture and to build the transparency values, it should be in place and understandable by entire team. And believe it is very important. I have good experience with not the latest, the before, with the weather condition. Central Bank of Oman, they decide to offer the loan deferment for all customers, regardless they have a waiver or they don't have. The circular came on Wednesday, mm-hmm. end of day, and we have only 1 day left working days. Then I call all the team, the digital, the tech team, and RASC. I told them, I don't know, but what I believe it, we have 48 hours to digitize full process of loan deferment and to be the first in the country. That means by Friday, we have to launch the services. How? No one asked me, but this is what I aim. Till 3 a.m. on Friday, entire team in the bank, they are working to digitize the services and to ensure to simplify the customer journey, because they believe once we digitize it, we achieve our goal. And our goal to satisfy customer, to maintain them, to retain them. As part of what is Backpace has been presented, there are 4 pillars. It is first the acquisition, second activation, the third expand, and the fourth is the retain. But I am not against the Backpace business model. I am with it. But if we, once we start to digitize anything, the first we think about how to maintain and retain customer, assuring you will be success. We launched the services on a Friday at 7 a.m. At 10 a.m., I was reviewing the statistics. It's 55,000 customer apply for loan deferment, fully digital. It was approved.
Amazing.
It is within almost 3 hours, we are process 55,000 transactions without any failure. And we got recognition from the regulation with that, because we support the customer. It is not only that. We have been noticed within 2 weeks, we have been onboarded almost 15,000 customers. Again, it's digitally, because majority of the service and product, we build it digitally. And that is what we have to believe it. And I was discussed with Salman from Cisco. It is one of the amazing experience we had it. We have 2 Eid, Eid Fatr and Eid Al-Adha. Central Bank has been decided to stop that Eid note and Eid Al-Fatr. Then it is great buzz in the market. All the customer was were disappointed, and they start the social medias give negative feedback. Then when we go back to office, I ask our brand team, I need the statistics. How many MBO customer was disappointed, and what is the feedback, and what is the statistic of the market? Everyone asked me why. I said, keep it for myself. I plan to create problem statement. From nothing, I have to create something. Then they give me all the statistics, and I see it is the use case. I agree with doctor. If there is use case, believe me, regardless what you are digitized, it will be success. From that statistics, I have been noticed. We have to create a digital solution which is fulfillment with our culture, and we are offering customer fully digital solution. We have a vending machine in our headquarter. I call the service provider. I want a solution, but what you are offering to us, it is not fulfillment my requirement. I explain to them in details what I am looking for it. I need vending machine. Fully digital solution, digital screen, touch points. I don't want anyone to see the Eid note in backside. I give them the specification. They build it for me. I obtained the CO approval, regulation approval to launch it. We launched a vending machine to offer customer Eid note with a nice package. It's written as Eid Mubarak, and with a different type of note. It is a bundle. It is not leaves. What is offering in the markets today, it is with the leaves. Like it is ATM cash withdrawal. But we decide to go as a bundle, full bundle. It is one bundle almost. There are 100 leaves, 200 leaves, 300 leaves. It was a very success story in the country. And it was my main objectives, actually, is two. One, to create the buzz in the market. Regardless, I know there is no ROI behind of it. The second, to give a privilege for the National Bank of Oman. And I restricted in that aspect. After that, within 2 days, we have been noticed. We onboard 1,800 customers again digitally. Because we restricted, we announced it in the market is only for MBO customer. We process 250,000 transactions within 5 days. And again, it is fully digital. And that's what we believe. And that's what has been created in customer mindset. And that's what we are going to continue with it. We are not going back.
I think that's an excellent perspective. I think keeping that same spirit in mind with Egypt in play and... You know, to my friend Heidi, I sometimes like to joke to her that Egypt's actually a part of the Middle East, but I may not get away with that one, but let's see. But yeah, Sharif, your quick perspective here, please.
Yeah, my quick perspective is the main focus should be definitely on customer experience. Mm. And when we were building one bank, we defined four main pillars for the build. From a customer perspective, they don't really get, they don't really care whether they are getting the service from a bank or from a fintech. Or what is the entity behind it? I don't think any of us care when we're getting when we're doing shopping on Amazon or Noon. What is the code written behind it? It's just I need the service. So the four main pillars that we focused on was mainly safe, simple, instant, and personalized. And because simply we cannot be competing with other service providers in the market. And I'm not talking about a digital bank, I'm talking about banking. And we are not instant or personalized. Safety definitely is 100%. One third of our investments in our infrastructure or technology spend was mainly put into cybersecurity. And it's not the end of it. We'll just continue building on top of that.
Amazing. And then Abdullah and Dr. Ahmed, the Saudi Arabia in and of itself is very diverse. So what's your perspective here?
Just quickly and conscious of time, I think maybe an idea to throw and take away after this panel is how important is the cultural note in and the way you construct your proposition. I think it all orbits around the feelings that you trigger within your customers, because you can use the most advanced technologies. You can put together the most complex journeys, but if it doesn't play on or trigger a particular feeling that the culture and in a smaller on a micro level, maybe the segment that you're trying to target, all of your effort becomes, redundant. And it plays a very important role because we've seen in different societies, maybe I'll give you an example, a quick one. They value trust more than, for example, flexibility and dynamic, dealings. So how can you build a proposition that, double downs on your ability to be always available for the customer and over time, cultivate that trusting relationship versus, be dynamic and be flexible, available everywhere in different venues. I'll give an example and I will end with it. Apple have always been very cautious about their, proposition. They wanted to always, give you a specific feeling when you use their technology, and that feeling is, we're very safe. You can always, trust us in keeping you your privacy and maintaining your privacy. We're reliable. It doesn't break easily, and so that didn't always put them at the forefront of or putting them first in releasing new products or services. but definitely help them create a very loyal and large customer base.
Yeah, also for the sake of the time, maybe two things that I would like to highlight. The first thing is the education of the community. And this is very important from banks and fintechs to play, because today the industry is moving very fast and the people getting out of the universities are not prepared for the market. I was just 2 days before giving a lecture in one of the universities in Riyadh. The team is about to graduate this year and they are far behind the market trends and what's going on, except maybe one student who was actually working in one of the fintech companies in Saudi, because his father is in the industry and he was trying to promote him as a fresh graduate to be ready for the market. But this is one of the key elements that I think banks should work on to educate the new generation, making sure that they are prepared for the market. The second point, which is very important, is the usability of the applications and the products. I recommend that anyone want to develop a service or a product, bring actual customers as a sample and do usability testing. Try to ask them indirect questions and then collect the feedback. Believe me, you might change even more than 50% of your thoughts about how to develop the product and how to propose the value to the market, because you never expect, especially the new generations that we have, you will never going to expect how they think and how they are expecting the product to be. So usability testing as well as educating the new generations, I believe those two points are very important for banks to play these days.
An excellent perspective, guys. Thank you so much for your time, your insights. I think this has proven to be incredibly valuable. And I think digital disruption is also a journey. So I think the journey continues. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.